Hi, everybody. I'm Avon. I'm an alcoholic. Wow, what a title. Senior board member. Actually, I'm honored to be a senior board member for my home group, the Atlantic Group. This has been my, I came to Atlantic Group in 1997. The group was a little more than 3 years old. I came looking for a sponsor. Rumor had it they hid the good sponsors at the Atlantic Group. I came all the way over here from the West Side in my motorcycle jacket with my epaulettes and my, yeah, it was very West Side. I hadn't gotten the strand of pearls yet. And I came looking for a sponsor and I wound up with a home group. And I've stayed, and it's been what a journey. My sobriety date is March the 1st, 1988. Just celebrated 29 years. It's a whole lifetime. It's a whole lifetime. You just, you know, you don't drink and you don't die, and you put some time together. It's a miracle. Of course, there's a lot more goes into the not drinking part. I mean, we say that very flip. You know, there's a lot of things. I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I did not understand what that was. I didn't even know that I had alcoholism. I didn't know what that was. I'm a nice Jewish girl from Brooklyn. I come from a very nice family, although I didn't think so at the time when I was newly sober. I thought I came from I was an adult child of a dysfunctional family. That was the jargon at the time. I wanted to pin this on somebody. I would have loved to point to the finger and said, oh, this is why this happened this way. No, no, no. Now I understand. I have alcoholism. I didn't understand what that was. And there's no alcoholism in my family other than mine that we're aware of. So some of us are just lucky. And it blows the theory out that, you know, it's hereditary. Well, you know, it can be hereditary. But my best friend always says to me, if I had your hair, I wouldn't be an alcoholic. Meanwhile, she's sitting next to me at the meeting. So there goes that theory. So if I would have had your parents, I wouldn't be an alcoholic. No, I had my parents. Guess who's alcoholic? I am. So I don't know. Some of us are just lucky. I was restless, irritable, and discontent. I didn't have language for that. I didn't know what that was. I felt like 10 pounds of potatoes in a 5-pound bag. I always felt a little crowded. It was very crowded in here. You know, my skin was a little too tight for me. I had very obsessive thinking. This is going back to, I can remember obsessive thinking in the first grade. I needed a drink by the third grade, and I didn't get one until junior high. So I was, like, way overdue. I wanted to be class president in the fifth grade. I think I ran for class president. I didn't sleep for the 3 days prior to the election. Okay? That's self-centered fear. Okay? And I don't know that any of the other people in the fifth grade were up worrying about who was going to vote for them. And I have certain patterns of thought that I believe are part of my alcoholism. I understand today that the core of it is extreme self-centered fear. That's how I'm wired. I couldn't put language on it. AA and sobriety and the fellowship helped me to name what was going on with me. And it's just this feeling that, there's something wrong with me. There's something going wrong. If you get really up close and you get to know me very well, you're going to see that and you're going to throw me away. Like, three people left. I'm sure they left because they don't want to hear me speak again. Okay? I mean, they probably have an upset stomach and I'm making it about me, which is self-centered fear. It must be about me. That's the self-centeredness. When we came to the rooms, they said selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of our trouble. I was very insulted. Because I didn't understand that self-centeredness, that I think that what's going on over there, I'll take it to be a reflection of myself. And I didn't understand what that was. And what does this have to do with alcoholism? Everything. It's very crowded in here, and I need a drink in order to relieve the crowd. And that's why it's what alcohol does for me, not what it does to me. Then it like tears me to shreds. But the payoff is greater than the ripoff, and until that changes, I'm in. And so, you know, that's a little bit of my the mindset. I was always very frightened. I didn't know that I had, like, I would not call out back door on the bus because I was afraid the whole bus would turn around and stare at me. Meanwhile, I wanted to be the center of attention, but then when I was the center of attention, I was uncomfortable and I didn't want to be the center of attention. So you're not going to win. Like, I'm not winning, you're not winning, and this is not going to be okay no matter what happens. There's not going to be enough attention, there's not going to be enough non-attention, no matter what's going to go on is not going to be right for me. Anywho, I was also a talented student. I'm not bragging because I just smoked those brain cells right away and did absolutely nothing with my gifts. Here's a little attitude for you. So I wanted to be a doctor. I'm a nice Jewish. I want to be a doctor. I wanted to go to medical school, and I got into this accelerated. I had to take a test for this accelerated program where they condensed junior high with or high school with pre-med or whatever. So it was an accelerated program. Of course I like it. It's fast. Anything fast is good by me because I want instant MD. You know, I want instant gratification. Everything has to be immediate. Immediate with me, like a chief of pet. I want a boyfriend. I want a fiancé. I want to take a guy, pour water, and turn him into a chief of pet boyfriend. Like instant intimacy, instant boyfriend, instant everything. So I get this test. I go to take the test, and I miss the grade by, I don't know, whatever points. I don't get into the special accelerated program, so guess what we do? Forget medical school. It's out. Out. Next. Out. Next. Anyway, I go to, and of course, we have a few things going on. Hormones. This is not, prepubescent girl and hormones and boys. Oh, that's the other thing. I've been boy crazy since kindergarten. There is a program for that, and we'll keep to the singleness of purpose. But I will say this. Everything is an outside issue unless you're going through it. Thank you, Scott R. And my boy craziness and my obsession with boys is directly related to my alcoholism, and it's what fuels the fire. And if I did not and continue to address those issues, those are the alcohol is but a symptom. If I don't get to the cause and condition, and that's part of mine, this girl is going to need a drink or an axe or something, because I am not going to be able to live this in this life without another solution. And that's, I have to address that stuff. And thank God for AA and all the A's, because it helps me to walk my way through a lot of this stuff. We have tools for all of it. We have a wrench for every nut in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm boy crazy, and I'm chasing boys, and we're drinking, and that's it. I'm going with a boy, put a boy in a drink or drinking a boy, and either order is fine, and I'm off to the races, and I'm following them wherever it is that they go. And that's what I did. I went to school. I skipped twice. Okay? And I'm in college young, and I was younger, but I thought I was like so mature and such an adult. Meanwhile, I really was not, but I thought who I was. And so I'm in school with people a lot older than me. That's a big difference when you're 16 and everyone else is 18 and 20 years old. And I hung out at the Student Union building, and I majored in South American agriculture and drinking. And that's what I did. And I was, and thank God that, I had a lot of very unpleasant coming-of-age experiences with boys and cars and alcohol and accessories to alcohol and all of that. And I already had terrible, for whatever reason, which I can't even explain, because my family of origin does not match some of my symptoms. My parents told me that my mother looks at me and she like swoons. And I'm like, step back, My love receptor is a little broken. We'll get to that. But you're beautiful, you're smart, you can do whatever you want. I had so much positive affirmation, okay? And I'm in the seat next to someone who got their tushy beaten to a pulp. And it's alcoholism. I just did not have esteem, and she couldn't love it away. She couldn't love away my low self-esteem. Because I have what this thing is that we have, I didn't understand what it was. And that's that, it's that empty, hollow, achy, throbby feeling here. That thing. And it's not fillable. But I didn't know what it was. So I was dancing as fast as I can. That was the other thing. I mean, it was the 70s. Oh, the music and the clothes. Preacher, platform shoes. I met Preacher at his, like, first meeting, and I told him that I made 90 outfits in 90 days, and he followed me around AA, and that's how he got sober the first time. I'll take credit for your sobriety, Preacher. But the 70s and the platforms and the dancing and the disco and the hustle and the, oh my God, it was just so, and the music, it was so intoxicating. But I have alcoholism, okay? And no matter what I did, no demonstration of popularity would suffice. I mean, I was popular. People wanted to hang out with me. People wanted to dance with me. I was very, very busy, but I never, it could not penetrate. It doesn't go in. I live in a bubble of self, and I'm encased in this thing. And the love isn't going in, and the love is not going out, and I'm isolated, living in my head, thinking about everything. I mean, I was so paranoid, I would have to go out dancing with a backup pair of pantyhose. Because if I got a run in my stocking, I could not tolerate having a run in my stocking because it would be such a blemish and an imperfection. That's how superficial and like, I didn't have any value for myself. It was all external. It was all, would all come from outside approval. And that's like, that's a tough place to live. Very tough place to live. Anyway. I lived there for quite some time. And then, of course, my best friend in high school was gay. We have to give the boys a shout out. My boys. Well, later called them my posse. And my best friend in high school was gay. And this, you know, we would go to his room and we would practice getting ready for the disco because you had to know how to dance before you. You did not learn how to dance on the dance floor. Oh, no. You had to be like ready before you step your toe on the dance floor. Now, this is also going on. I don't know that it was really that, you know, that mean. Well, maybe it was. But this is in my mind, if I didn't have it all together, forget it. You were going to throw me away. So, it was all about the gay bars and the boys and the, you know, and it's just more. And that's perfect for a girl like me. It's just more. And that's what I want is more. And so I just danced my way right off the planet. That's all I did was dance and drink and party. That's it. So if you see that I'm a reasonable dancer, it's because that's all I did. I better dance good because that's all I did. I worked. Oh, I did work. I worked and then, you know, partying interfered, you know. Working got in the way of dancing, so work had to go. Anyway, it's like a long journey of just craziness. Anyway, I danced right off the planet. My girlfriends, who were my Long Island disco girlfriends with the hair and the nails, you know, the bang with its own zip code. That's what life was like. And the most beautiful girls, normal girls. Normal girls that my one girlfriend, she goes, okay, let's go home. I was like, that's alcohol abuse. What do you mean, let's go home? There's an after hours open. We didn't go to the... Anyway, they were worried about me, as they should have been, because I was dying, and they staged an intervention, and they said, I went to the house. It was a Friday night, the new house. The girlfriend came with her fiancé, with the new engagement ring, no resentment there. We pull up to the cul-de-sac, no resentment there. Now, I don't even know that I have a resentment because I don't know what a resentment is, okay? I just know that I feel sick to my stomach. That's all I know. I'm either fabulous or horrible. I don't know what it is, and I don't know what the cause of it is. And they convinced me to call this... phone number, and it was a hotline, and I get on the phone with this woman, and I tell her my story. And all I had was the bravado of how much I drank, how much I partied, and my history. So I didn't lie. I told her the truth about what I'd been up to. And you know how we know, you know, I knew she had my number through the phone, okay? You know how we know each other. And she said to me, people like you with a history like yours don't go to a meeting and problem is solved. Like I said, okay, I'll go to a meeting, you know. I'll go to a meeting. And she's like, no. Okay. A meeting, not solving this problem. And I heard her. I heard her, and I had a moment of clarity, and I got a snapshot of really, for the first time, of what was really going on, and that I was in big trouble, and I didn't even know it. And I had a moment of clarity. I said, okay, I'll go for help. And the friends set me up to help me get into rehab. And I went to rehab that following week. I had insurance because my mother was paying my insurance bill. The dysfunctional family, yes, was carrying my health insurance. Thank God for them, because she was afraid. Well, they're Jewish, so health insurance is their drug of choice. I love insurance. I have every kind of insurance that you can buy. I love insurance. Anyway, I wanted to sell insurance. That's how much I love insurance. I love insurance. It's so sober. Insurance is so sober, isn't it? I love insurance. Anyway, I love being sober. I love being sensible now. And I was like anything but sensible. Like my whole demeanor was all about being fabulous and crazy and just outrageous and, you know, yeah, and the outfits and the whole thing, you know, the bandeau and the whole everything. It's all that. That's it. It was all about the outfits and the clubs and the DJs. It's still about that. Nothing has changed, by the way. Nothing has changed. The same players, Miss Fabulous, Mr. Fabulous, the gay boyfriend, the straight guy that goes to the gay club, the gay guy that goes to the straight club. All right, are you with me? It's all the same. Drinking. Okay. So I go to rehab, and so I pack for rehab like I'm going to Club Med. What do I know? And I have all of my T-shirts from all the clubs that I go. We have all these theme parties. I have my white party T-shirt. For those of you that don't know, a white party is a party where everyone wears white and we dance until we're gray. Anyway, I show up. I have photographs of my three favorite boyfriends. I have all of this, you know, for my bedside so that I can, you know, just like lay there and just have self-pity oozing from every pore. Poor me. I'm in rehab. What happened to me? I can't believe I'm in rehab. Why am I? Oh, my God. How did this happen to me? I drank my way to rehab. It's like not a mystery. But, you know, we need drama and everything. Anywho, so day one, I go sashaying into the, you know, in the common room. In my white party T-shirt, I don't even know how much I weighed, 117 pounds, okay, which was, you know, whatever the word is. I needed to eat something. I hadn't seen malnourished. I hadn't seen, like, a green vegetable in I don't know how long. I don't know what I was eating. You know, we would come to after a four-day run, and then we would eat, like, the couch, and then we wouldn't eat for a week. I mean, that is not healthy living. I mean, that's what we would do, like a side of beef and, you know, I mean, 7 hamburgers, 400 chocolate bars, and then not eat for a week. I mean, that's how it was. It's not good. This is not good for you. Anyway, I sashay, and here comes Craig, looks me up and down. Where'd you get the T-shirt? Craig, nice Jewish gay boy from Queens, doing what I had been doing, only in Queens. I had been doing it in Manhattan. That was it. He had 2 weeks of sobriety, and he knew everything that we needed to know about sobriety, and he was going to tell me. And guess what? He knew everything we needed to know. And what it was we were going out, we were going to meetings, we were getting sponsors, we were getting service commitments, and we were getting busy, and we were getting involved. And he picked me up from rehab on the day that I got out, and he took me to a meeting with my bag of laundry, like they said, show your commitment to sobriety, you go to the meeting first, and then you go home. And that was where, that's how the journey, me and the bag of laundry went to the meeting, and I went and they said, get phone numbers and this, that. And I went over to this gal and I said, can I get your phone number? I just got out of rehab. And she said, no. Alrighty then. I was not going to let anybody stand in my way of getting sober. Fine, knock yourself out, Toots. You watch me get 90 days. I'm going to get sober to spite her. So whatever, God has skills. He's going to use what you have. Just you better believe it. Anywho, I met that girl years later. I finally got to understand where she was at. So it doesn't really matter. I'm the one who has to take action for my sobriety. Nobody's going to keep me out of a meeting, keep me out of a room, keep me out of AA. I don't care what they do or what they say. Too many meetings, too much to do, too much to recover from. And Craig and I ran around, and we went to meetings like we were going to club openings. Speaker meeting in Whitestone. Off we would go. I mean, we ran around. It was amazing, amazing. Early sobriety was amazing, and basically that's what I did. And eventually I got a sponsor. Of course, I wanted Joan of Arc to be my sponsor. She was unavailable, you know, the perfect sponsor. I asked the perfect girl to sponsor me. This beautiful young girl, Valerie, was my sponsor. She was 18. With 2 years of sobriety, that's who I asked to be my sponsor. That's why I have a real connection to the young people in the rooms, because I saw myself in her and I had a connection with her, and I knew that she got me, and, it was the beginning of my journey. We did the steps as best as we could. I think hieroglyphics are more detailed than my first fourth step, but that's what I was available to do. The principle is you do what you can do. And then you surrender yourself and you keep coming back, and then you give what, as you meet yourself, you surrender the rest of it. You know, that's the rest of yourself as you meet it, as you go along. And it was just amazing. And that's what I've been doing. I've been in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous since the very beginning. I had a service commitment and a sponsor, and I didn't do it perfectly. Look at me, I'm doing service. I mean, of course, I'm like an overachiever. I'm gonna be the best AA ever. Ever. I mean, forget it. Look at me. I'm doing service. I had 100 service commitments. Never hurt me, by the way. Too much service never hurt me. Always helped me, because when my brain would melt and when I would go crazy, I would be in the middle of a meeting, maybe with my head on fire, but I would be in the room with all of you. Service keeps me sober. And then I did the steps horribly. All my sponsees have done much better steps than I did. My steps were awful. Of course, in my head always says, you didn't do a proper fourth step. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. I have alcoholism, not alcoholism. I have it's a living illness. It lives in my head. It's a thinking illness. It speaks fluent AA speak. As I stay sober, it gets more cunning and more sophisticated in the way that it uses the program against me. And that's why I have to double my efforts and keep doing what it is that I continue to do. A number of years in, what a journey. We all went to the Hamptons. Unbelievable. We went to the Hamptons and many of my fellows are in the room. We were in a house together. It was like spiritual bumper cars. And, I mean, if you want to see what you're made of. And beautiful Becca was my roommate. And I have a theory as to why the Atlanta group has so many young people. Eric and Richard were in our summer house. They were much younger than us, and they got sober. We took them under our wing when they got sober. So these two really hot-looking young guys get sober at the Atlanta group, and they start going around Manhattan. Dayton's cracking up because he knows I'm right. They start going to meetings all over, telling everyone about the Atlanta group, how wonderful it is, and also that there's so many pretty girls there. So now all the pretty girls see these two at meetings, they start flocking to the Atlanta group, right? So then these little girls start getting sober. They start running around Manhattan talking about their new home group, the Atlanta group. Next thing you know, here comes all these young guys start coming to the meeting. Next thing you know, the whole meeting is 30 years or younger. God has skills. Okay, who would ever believe that it would be the young people in our group that would be the most enthusiastic, the most excited for the structure, the most willing to do service, the most serious about working the steps, much more so than others by the way, or people who had been here for a while. Okay, because we had a lot of we have a lot of fellows myself that are sober for a while and they get lost in their sobriety. This is a good group for those people too, because it helps the structure of the group is really what helps to keep myself on track. I love the structure of this group. I was my early years in the program, I didn't have a home group like this. I already had nine, ten years of sobriety. I did my home group was the Hospital Institution Committee. I did my service on, I took meetings to detoxes and rehabs. That was really what I did, the kind of service that I did. And so it was very structured. We had very specific guidelines of what to do, how to do it, where to go, when to go. I would have a monthly meeting, this, that, or the other thing. So that was really, I had a very structured program. I didn't even know it. And so when I wound up coming to the group in search of a sponsor, Eventually, I did the steps, had a very nice sponsor on the West Side. I did the steps out of the Big Book. I think I might have gone to a Joe and Charlie. That's because we met a lot of our friends, myself included. We started to go to Sober Club Med. We went to the Hamptons. We went to Sober Club Med trips. And we started to meet people from outside of New York AA. And the influence on the California AA was astounding. Because those groups, when you get sober in California, you get sober on the Big Book. Okay? In New York at the time when I was coming up in AA, we read the 12 and 12. We didn't really read the Big Book. They told us to read two pages as a sleep aid. So we read it, but it wasn't like, that's not how we did the step work. I don't really know what we did. It was a little chopped up, okay? And then Joe and Charlie, we all went to Joe and Charlie, Big Book studies, and I wound up with, I had this sponsor, Irene, who did the steps out of the Big Book, and she helped me do my steps out of the Big Book, and that was my first round of real steps. I'm going to have to put that in quotes, you know, because you know what? I don't like to minimize or talk down to any of the work that I have ever done in this program. It all added to each other, and it all, I built on it. I wouldn't have understood anything earlier than that. So with this, never want to demean anything that I've ever done in this program, because it all added to everything. And I could tell the difference between this approach and that approach. It only helps me to be more effective today, because I have a wider experience of using the literature in many different ways and which works is the most effective. So that's what happened for me. I wound up going to Joe and Charlie, and then we met these different people through the West Coast AA, and I met this guy, Scott R., and what an influence he has had in my sobriety. I mean, if this guy would have stopped short, he would have found me, you know, like I would have bumped into him. I mean, this guy was amazing, and he was, he definitely passed away too young, but he had a way of explaining the inventory process in a way that was very usable and very understandable, and then I could make use of it within myself. I think that's what I find so exciting about the steps and reapplying the steps and growing along spiritual lines and growing in awareness, because I didn't have this awareness when I was young in the program. I wouldn't have understood what you were talking about. And that's why I'm so thirsty for it and why I'm so grateful for it and why I work so, that's why I had to work so hard on learning how to take my inventory, was because I didn't understand what you were talking about. When they talked about resentment, I said, I don't have any resentments. And truth be told, I didn't have too many, and the ones I had were all self-directed, which is a double serving of self-centeredness. For me to think that everything is my fault is extra self-centered, not less, by the way. And I really identify with my sponsor because she also had that. You know, how is it possible? You know, the war in Eckveld is not directly related to Ava. But, you know, somehow, you know, you didn't treat me bad. I think that, you know, you're rude to me. I think it's my fault. That's like double low self-esteem. Low self-esteem is a step up for me. I had negative esteem and no self-worth. And that's why I was so hungry for your approval and attention that I would sell myself so short. And it took time and sobriety to, like, get to see that. So when I started to reapply the steps and learn how to do the steps out of the book, and started to take other people. When they talk about doing the work in this program, it's not about me staring at my belly button. Yes, I cannot give away what I don't have. That's clear. But it's in my effort to help you that I get all of my missing pieces. My awareness and understanding and the rest of the missing pieces to my own story came through my efforts of taking you through your step. My efforts in helping you write your fourth step. My efforts in helping you write a tenth step. Not in me staring at myself in the mirror. Because there's too much between me and me. There's too much ego. I don't even know that I even have an ego. I was probably 10 to 12 years sober before I realized that I had pride. That I had a lot of pride. I didn't want to look bad. I could never admit that I wasn't doing well. I could never tell you. That's dishonest, by the way. I had a lot of false pride, about, all right, I'm sober, I'm doing 50 times more service commitments than you, why am I not getting my way in my life? Okay, I'm thinking I'm supposed to have X cash and X prize directly related to these 45 service commitments. Well, guess what? Life does not work that way. And what it is about this continual journey of surrender and to the ego and ideas and false ideas and old ideas about self and all kinds of, you know, things that stand in the way. I was, I'm sober a few years. I figure, okay, you know, here I am. I'm boy crazy, right? I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to do my job in Alcoholics Anonymous at some point. I'm going to meet a nice guy, and then it's toodaloo, right? Or whatever. I'm going to have this wonderful boyfriend or what have you, and all will be well. Well, guess what? It didn't pan out that way. And so at certain points, I would become very, very, very upset about that. I've done everything. What's wrong with me? And then people would be talking about, I'm happy, joyous, and free. I'm wherever I am. All this. I've never had it so good. I'm happy, joyous, and free. I'm trudging the road to happy destiny. I'm this, that, and the other thing. I'm sitting here in the second row, of course, because, you know, whatever. And I'm like, what's wrong with me and what's wrong with my sobriety? Ego, self-centeredness, pride, that I'm not getting all of these things that I think that I should have. So, and I need to do more inventory about that. Says who that you're going to get X, Y, and Z, that things don't always unfold. And what are we going to do, kiddos, when things do not unfold according to the plan? What then? Shall we run into traffic? Shall we take our ball and go home? What are we going to do? No, what we're going to do is we're going to turn our thoughts and our vision from the lack and what we don't have and bring it over here and put the focus on what it is that we do have, which is what AA teaches us to do. Take another service commitment, work with others, and find joy in living in what it is that we have and with what's in front of us. And let go or be dragged. Let go or be dragged. Bonnie. If you ever watch me and Bonnie, when the speaker says something that we really identify with, we look at each other and we give each other the, it's the, I get it, signal. You need to have some fellows in your life. Besides a sponsor, you need some fellows that you trudge around with, that you can share with, and that you can talk to. Very important in this program. I have my Amala. I have my Howard. I was on vacation with Howard a couple of years ago posting pictures on Facebook, and friend of mine says, how can I get a Howard? How can I get a Howard? I have my Jeff, my Bonnie, my Vince, my Pete, my Amala, my bestie AA girlfriend, who doesn't come to this group, loves that group, doesn't come to this group, does her A-Hub program the way that she does her program, and does very well in her life, okay? And I have to keep my BI business out of her BI business. And I have to do that with a lot of my friends. I'm not their sponsors, and it's none of my business what my friends do and how they work their program. Yeah. That's what goes on in the head, and that's it. That's what AAT, if you'd like to have friends, you better learn how to do that. Otherwise, it's going to grow old around here, because guess what? These people have character defects. And if you don't learn to love them in spite of that, it's going to be a very lonely life. That's what I learned, because guess what? I might not like the behavior, but I love the person. And sometimes the people I love the most are not behaving the way that I want them to. Which brings me to this morning. Okay, I'm going to tell on myself. My parents, who are absolutely adorable, although my mother was not very adorable this morning at 7:30 a.m. when she was calling, going, I don't want to go, I don't feel good, and I don't want to go to the procedure. I'm going to cancel. Give me the phone number so I can cancel. I was like, what? So here I am telling you about love and tolerance, and I was yelling at my 82-year-old mother on the phone at 8 o'clock in the morning. Well, I was speaking harshly with her. And actually, what happens is, though, that's not okay, that's not good ski with me, okay? Because what has as a sober person, certain behaviors, what does this have to do with sobriety? If I am not in sync with my spiritual principles, I don't feel right. And when I don't feel right, I need to set that right. Because if I don't, a drink waits. There's a drink at the end of the road, whichever, all of these things are all, they're all taking me to a drink. Either a way I behave, or a way that I think, or a way that I do, or a way that I feel. There's a drink at the end of it. And we have tools to untangle and unravel those knots that we have. We have inventory, we have prayer, we have fellowship, we have service, we have meditation. I meditate every morning. I meditated, I called her back, I convinced her that she was making a poor choice, that if she canceled at 8:30 or if she waited until she felt better and maybe she wouldn't feel the way she felt at 10:30, that she might be able to go and that it didn't make a difference. And it was a surgical center, not a place that you call at the last minute to cancel something that took weeks to schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Why I was foaming at the mouth. Anyway, and the history with my mother is it's been a battle of the wills since early childhood. So it's really tricky. But, I'm very fortunate to have those parents that I have. And I really appreciate them for all that they do. I did not appreciate them, and I did not know what I had as parents until I was sober for a little while in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I began to recognize who these people are and how they've always had my back and they've always supported me. And I'm a very fortunate person, and it's now my turn to support them. And we wound up being able to go, and I was able to take her, and it all worked itself out. And I didn't tell her I told you so. I encouraged her, and I said, you see, things work out. She doesn't have a program. She has the kind of fear that I have, only she has no program. Yeah. Although she's not alcoholic, because we told her, no, you cannot take that. My mother hasn't slept in 20 years. And so she gets medication from the doctor, but they told her, no, you cannot take that pill with that pill. Okay? It's not safe for you to do. And it made her sleep. But because we said, no, you cannot have that with that, she never took it again. Are you kidding me? That's the difference. I rest my case. So that needs treatment. So when they said that alcohol is a symptom, we have to get down to causes and conditions. A lot of times in my life today, I am very happy, joyous, and free. I'm not preoccupied with myself. I'm not afraid of you wondering what you're thinking about me or if you like me or if you don't like me. Sometimes I'll catch, you know, someone will say something and it'll sound slow, and then I'll wind up in a resentment or in a fear. It's alcoholism. But a lot of the time, I'm very comfortable in my own skin. I'm okay when things don't work out according to my plan. I can even tolerate my boss, Bruce, which didn't get any airtime tonight because he's a character. But we've written lots of 10 steps about him. He's also a good man. That's what I always do, is I come to see who the people are and what it is that they have to offer in their lives and who they really are, as opposed to what it is that in my keen, magical, alcoholic mind I have created these people to be. And when I can ask God for help and use those tools, it sets me right and I'm okay and I'm at peace with you and everyone else. So I hope I was helpful with something tonight. Thank you.